The Get Fishing Podcast is back for a new series. We're starting off with all-round angler Phil Spinks. Phil is part of the Angling Direct Media team. He has become a social media star with some of the most amazing catches I have ever seen. This is the Get Fishing Podcast with me, Jimmy Willis. Get Fishing is the Angling Trust campaign to get more people fishing. We're funded from a fishing license income from the Environment Agency. And as always, a massive thank you to our partners, Shakespeare and Angling Direct. Phil Spinks, how are you, my friend?
I'm very good.
We can hear and see you. It took a little while to get there, but six minutes, but we're there.
Yeah, I'm better with a fishing rod than a computer, Jim. I did pre-warn you.
How is life at Angling Direct, Phil?
Life's good. Life's busy, but busy is good, I guess. But lots in the pipeline, and it's good.
I've been looking through your Instagram, and I don't know if I've ever seen an Instagram from an angler that is so multi-species.
I've got a very short attention span, Jimmy. And I'm probably quite greedy. I want to catch them all. Now, depending on what time of the year, I like to target all different species. And that is, I'll get very bored if I just did one type of fishing. So
yeah, I like to mix it up. I agree with you, Phil. I do a lot of sea fishing, then I do sort of my freshwater match angling, then I do some pike or barbel fishing. So I'm similar to you. I don't really know how people just do one thing. I just go carp fishing or just so. I couldn't do it. I'm not bored's the wrong word, but I just always looking for that new adventure.
Keeps it really exciting and fresh. And quite often if I target a species, as soon as I've caught a really big one, I think, what next?
Yeah.
I think I've ticked that box. I'll always go back to species, but throughout the year I've done some tench fishing this spring and was fortunate enough to catch a couple of nice big ones early on and I felt full up and I thought, right, so let's get the carp rods out or go barbel fishing. So that's keeping it fresh, keeping it interesting and always chasing the next one is the key.
We've got some listener questions that have come in. We're gonna go over that a little bit later on. I'm just looking at your Instagram. It's Phil_Spinks. Well worth a follow. Go and have a look. It's mad. So I'm looking at a recent post here of the biggest bream that I ever seen. And it says, still my personal best bream. It says PB bream for beginner anglers. PB, what does that mean, Phil?
Oh, my personal best. So, the biggest of that species. I think that is 20 years ago, that bream. I'm getting old now. Yeah, you can tell by my pointy out ears, look.
So 18 pounds, 2 ounces, beautiful colours. If you're listening to the audio version of this podcast, you can see it on YouTube, and I'll put the pictures up. Beautiful dark bream, isn't it?
So there's a funny story behind that. That was Barbara Lakes in Norfolk.
Yeah.
And that particular bream at the time was the British record bream. It had been caught slightly heavier than that year.
Really?
And I thought to myself that season, there was probably half a dozen bream in about 25 acres. but the smallest bream I'd heard of was about 13.5 pounds. So I thought, if I can catch one bream this year out of that lake, it'll be my biggest bream ever. I cut a long story short, my first night of trying to catch a bream from that lake, about 3:30 in the morning, the bobbin pulls up and all the rest is history, 18 pound 2. So the biggest fish in the country at the time, but I had it slightly lighter than when it held the record. But and then I did go on to catch it about a month later at 17.15. So the only bream I caught from that lake was that one twice.
I don't know what the British record is now, Phil, do you know?
Yeah, I think it's 23 and a couple of rounds. There's a guy called Scott Crook. I've met Scott before. He's a Norfolk carp angler, but it's mad, isn't it? All species seems to have got bigger and bigger over the years, don't they?
It's funny how things sometimes, like you go and target something and it just kind of happens all very simply, and then sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, you definitely. If it does happen like that, I certainly know I'm probably going to pay for it in the long run when I'm trying to catch something else. So enjoy those moments because they don't always come that easy. But sometimes the things that are a lot harder to catch, where you've really had to keep working at it, you know, they're all that more special when it does happen. The big barbel when they're in the Wensum, I must admit I caught barbel from the Wensum, but I left it right to the wire when I caught my biggest. They were getting polished off by the otters, and I just managed to get one just under 18 pounds sort of at the end of the heyday of the Wensum. So I was so pleased when I was looking at it in the net. I thought, you know, because I didn't think it was going to happen.
18 pound barbel's big, isn't it? That's a big fish. Mine's 14, I think. I went at the Trenton, caught a barbel at 14 pound a few years ago, and I'm very much sort of I don't know, it's lit something. I've been doing a bit more river fishing now, and it's just we've got the British record not far from a house, so it's there's some monsters in there, but it's I'm just sort of the Arran and the Rother, like the Arran's tidal, which is a lot of people don't fish it because it's hard, basically. Yeah. It's hard work.
Well, barbel fishing can be from one extreme to the other. You can be fishing rivers like the Trent, which are quite hostile and you know, you're fishing quite heavy gear. Then, like what the Wensum was, you're almost dropping baits under the rod tip and watching barbel. Yeah. And it was, you know, completely different fishing for the same species. So, I miss the sort of smaller rivers for barbel. I hope to do some more of that at some point.
And going back to the bream picture, so this was a British record fish that you had caught, not at the British record weight, but it was it had come out as a British record.
There was two. So on that same complex, that was from what they call Coney Lake.
Yeah.
I believe I might be an ounce or two out, but the British record was 18.9 from the lake next door, a guy called Kerry Walker. And then that fish got caught out of another lake but they were two different fish at the same weight, so it was like a joint record. I caught the Coney fish, but not quite heavy enough to claim a record.
So what? How did you catch this massive bream? What is the secret? What was the tactic? So, what was the bait?
From what I know of bream, however big the lake is, you can make the lake seem smaller because there's areas of gravel pits that I don't think bream like. They don't like shallow, weedy areas. They like clean gravel and sort of deeper, gravelly, firmer spots. So on that particular lake, straight away, half the lake, I thought, well, I don't think I'm going to catch the bream there. Weather as well plays a part. So what the weather conditions, winds, stuff like that. And I was really fortunate. I was using a method feeder with sweet corn. And looking back at it, I was so lucky. I didn't spot any bait out. I loaded the method feeder up, fishing to a spot on a line clip on the gravel. I probably had about 8 or 9 casts straight away just to get some bait out, like a match angler would with a feeder. And then just left it there. And I thought it was going to be a long game. I thought I was going to have to do that, you know, all spring, all summer to build up to one bite. And I couldn't believe it. Up past 3 in the morning. As soon as I picked the rod up, you know, they're not the hardest fighting fish, but a big bream will just slowly plod and use its weight. And I thought, I've hooked a bream. I thought worst case scenario is probably going to be over 13 pound, which would have been my biggest at the time. Couldn't believe it. It was quite a distinctive fish. If anyone looks at a picture, the tail gives it away. It's got like a little white tip on the bottom of the tail. And it almost looked like someone's got a 10 pence and punched a hole out the other bit of the tail.
You said wind conditions can play a difference. Is that just with bream fishing in general?
Any, especially larger pits. Big warm southwesterly winds and a new wind, that the fish will react to that. It can seem a bit uncomfortable to the angler fishing with the wind in your face, but at certain times, especially on those lower stocked pits, you'd be daft to ignore those conditions. There's pike fishing, carp fishing, tench, even my big roach fishing. I'm not so sure that they like the really cold winds in the colder weather, but certainly those warmer winds, I think the saying is when the wind blows west, the fish bite best. I think
that is a very famous saying. And for new anglers, if you kind of remember that, it can. Well, actually, go fishing when you want, and then you document down what the weather was like, and it does follow a pattern, I think. Even with sea fishing or any type of fishing, it just seemed to follow that pattern a little bit.
Weather plays, you know, in all fishing. I always joke and and people always ask me what my favourite conditions for fishing are, talking about as complicated as air pressure and moon phases and all this.
Yeah.
My straight answer is my favourite fishing conditions are Thursdays, because I normally have Thursdays off.
Yeah.
So come high pressure, low pressure, northerly winds, westerly winds. Don't forget, the sort of fishing I do, even if the conditions are tough, you only want one bite and it could be an 18-pound bream. I don't necessarily go out with the intention of not catching loads of fish. I just want that one bite that matters. So even if I'm up against it, it's still worth going.
And we're talking a very sort of specimen prime conditions. If you're just going fishing for the day down your local commercial, you're pretty much in almost any condition, a lot of these commercials now, you're going to go and catch some fish. It's January or February at the moment. Not the warmest of weather. If you were to go out for a few hours down your local commercial, depending where you are, you're always going to be in with a bite at this time of year. What would you do, Phil, this time of year in February?
I'd probably change, if I just wanted to catch fish.
Yeah.
I mean, I am probably OCD with all my fishing about neatness and paying attention to detail. But keep everything neat and tidy. And especially in the colder weather, natural baits like maggots and worms can get you extra bites. And the obvious thing on these little lakes, they're normally quite heavily stocked. And with a quick walk around, the fish will normally tell you where they are, whether they're rolling on the surface or a bit of fizzing somewhere. But I think the truth is, on the smaller commercial lakes, you're never far away from a fish. And don't be scared to move if you haven't caught anything after a while. Have a move of swims.
There we go. Extremely good information from Phil. Just looking through your Instagram again here. There's a post here with a roach, and it says, discovered literally dozens of pictures of £3-plus roach on an old memory card this morning.
So
you've caught dozens of £3-plus roach.
I'm a bit of an anorak. I can tell you exactly today, by design, fishing for roach. I mean, these are gravel pit roach. I've had 52 threes. I know I've had 52 threes.
Blimey.
And then there's a handful that I've wound in by accident on carp rods when carp fishing. But I was very fortunate a few years ago to stumble across the big roach at Homersfield Lake. And I was spoilt rotten for huge numbers of 2 and 3 pound roach. It was dream fishing. It really was.
Remarkable, Phil, just because of I've never caught a 3 pound roach. I caught one just under, and I've got to admit, it was on a 16 mil boilie carp fishing. I count it because I caught a fish on a hook, but obviously wasn't targeting it on a 16 mil krill boilie. Right, listener questions. We put out that you were coming on. We've got a few questions for you to answer. One from Brian. My son came to a get fishing event in spring, last spring. He caught a small roach and a bream. They had like an amazing time. His son's been following a few social accounts and he started seeing pictures of perch. He loves perch now, beautiful fish. And he kind of wants to know the best way, where and how to catch a perch. And before Phil answers, ain't perch, would you say, Phil, they've become a lot more trendy over the last few years? Carpy.
They have, yeah. Perch and probably a little bit of grayling as well. But I think the beauty of fishing for perch is there's so many different methods you can use to target them, because they're predatory fish, whether you want to go down that route of lure fishing for them and fishing for them that way. But if you just want to catch perch, probably the simplest and the easiest method is float fishing a worm.
Yes.
And with targeting any certain species, the most important thing is a little bit of research on the venue. Make sure you find a lake that's got a reasonable stock of perch first, because you're not going to catch them if they're not there. It's as simple as that.
But I tell you what, Phil, that's probably some of the best angling advice for a beginner angler ever. And it sounds so obvious, but
you're
trying to catch a 40-pound carp, and there isn't a 40-pound carp in there.
You're definitely not going to catch one. So,
the research.
Choose your venue wisely. Make sure there's definitely, most still waters have got perch in them, but some have got bigger perch than others. And then, I say, float fishing with worms. I like to have the worm laying on the bottom, so I'll plumb the depth first to find out how deep the swim is. And then, this is a mistake I often see, when I've worked in tackle shops in the past. Fish the worm on the bottom and just keep feeding red maggots little and often. You probably want a couple of pints of maggots the best anglers, the best feeders. So by just keep introducing a little pinch of maggots every now and again around the float and build the swim up, you'll probably catch a few different species along the way, but there isn't a perch that swims that doesn't like a worm. So that's probably the best place to start.
Looking at worm baits, I presume you sell different worm baits. What, do you have lobworms and dendrobenias?
Yeah, me being me, my favourite perch bait would be a lobworm, because I want to catch a big perch and they're a bigger worm.
So lobworms are bigger, simple as that.
So I'd normally put half a lobworm on, and then just to make sure it doesn't come off the hook, I'll tip it with a red maggot. You know, the perch like the maggots as well, and it holds the bait on. You can feed a little bit of chopped worm in the swim as well. And I think using half a worm sort of oozes out a bit more flavour as well.
What size hook are we talking, Phil?
I'd use, on half a lobworm, I'd use either an 8 or a 10.
So a nice big hook, no messing about.
If you catch a small perch, they've got quite big mouths and they're very greedy fish. So, yeah.
What is your record perch then, dare I ask?
my biggest perch is £5.9. I'll travel all over the country and fish different waters, and up at £5.9. I've been fortunate. I've had a few fish over £5 now, and they are absolutely massive.
I mean, I haven't ever caught a £5 perch, but everyone does say when they're getting up to that, they just look like just massive. And it's something that I definitely would like to... I haven't spent that much time perch fishing, but it's something certainly recently on socials, over the winter months, because that's the good thing about perch. You can catch them in the winter, can't you?
They'll feed in the coldest conditions, and a big perch can turn up absolutely anywhere, whether that be a giant reservoir or a farm pond or a stretch of river. They're one of those type of fish that you can get a surprise sometimes. You can be fishing... But you talk about commercial fisheries, which are probably more known for numbers of small carp, but hidden amongst those carp quite often are giant perch that get ignored. So if you've got an inkling that there might be some, have a go in the wintertime.
There we go. Next up, Sarah has got in touch and she wants to know if you could only fish for one species of fish forevermore, one species, what would it be?
I always think this is quite an easy one for me. I think we talked about it on the phone the other day, and it's big pike. Out of all the big fish I've caught, that there's, and what I mean by, for me, a big pike is anything over 25 pound. You know, locally in Norfolk, we call a 25 pound pike a donkey normally. It's a nickname. And however many I might have been lucky enough to catch, every time I see one on the bank, it's wow. That's massive. You know, they really are beyond impressed. I mean, 30-pound pike is obviously mega special, but even when they get over 25, I've probably got a little bit climatized to big roach, and you know, I really like catching them, but for every single pike I get over that weight, I'm like, they're the ones. And again, like the perch fishing, the pike fishing is very versatile, whether you want to lure fish for pike, dead bait for pike, float fish, ledger. There's so many different ways to target them. I mean, it takes you to some really interesting venues, whether they be reservoirs, lakes, rivers. You know, you could enter. It is winter fishing for me, but I'd happily sacrifice my summer fishing just to wait till the winter. Big pike, yeah.
What's your biggest ever pike?
My best pike is £34.12.
That's just ridiculous. Yeah, absolutely. Where was that from?
My biggest pike came from a small little gravel pit in Norfolk, about 4 or 5 acres, that on paper shouldn't have had a big pike in it. It was a real surprise.
So it had no one knew a big pike was in there?
No, it had no history of big fish. It had a handful of quite tired-looking jack pike, and a small stocking of big carp, but it didn't really get pike fished, mainly because we never thought there was any big pike in there. Yeah, and this one just turned up completely out of the blue. I think what had happened is just one pike in that lake had reached the size that it could eat the smaller pike.
Yeah.
And there were a few small tench in the pit, and I'm pretty sure its diet was jack pike and 3-pound tench, is what it used to feed on. I'll tell you when I caught it. I caught it, I mean, it was quite limited access to this lake, and I got an invite to have a go during the Beast from the East when we had that really cold
That was cold, wasn't it?
I remember, obviously, it was a Thursday, and I'm driving there in sideways snow and bitterly cold weather thinking, what am I doing? You know, but like I said to you earlier, you only need one bite. Yeah, and about 11 o'clock that morning, that one bite happened on an alleged heron on a drop-off alarm, and £34.12, an enormous fee.
A herring, one of your favourite pike baits?
Yeah, and I'm the OCD kicks in. When I get my herring, I'm pretty much at the docks at Lowestoft waiting for the boat to come in to get them as fresh as I can. And then I've got myself one of these vacuum packers. I'll get them vacuum packed down and in the freezer. And yeah, with pike fishing, having good quality dead baits definitely makes a difference, you know.
Yeah, and when you say you get your dead baits pretty much off the boat, I've actually noticed massive results, and not just my pike fishing, but my sea fishing, where I use a lot of mackerel baits throughout the year. When the mackerel come in, them fresh mackerel that you've just caught and frozen instantly is 100% a million times better than it is. Just I know what's happening with it, and as what we're talking about now, Phil, is it's more, you don't have to. If you're just going fishing, getting your angling direct, you can buy your bits and bobs. But when you progress, you do get this. Oh, no, it's got to be everything's obsessive.
If you pay attention to all those little details, whether it's your bait or your setup, and you do everything as neat and as best you can, you'll notice that you're suddenly catching more than the people around you. And they'll think they're doing the same as you, but you... Yeah, you can put everything in your favour by being OCD is the word. You speak to a lot of anglers out there that are very successful, and they've quite often got it in common that they go the extra mile to get everything perfect.
And even when you're starting out fishing, it's just them little things. Is your bait on there okay? Is it presented nice? Instead of just that-a-do attitude, it's almost like anything you do in life, really. Just that little bit of more attention to detail. Has the maggot been on there too long? Is the bit of sweet corn on there okay? Where instead of, well, it'd probably be all right, just that little bit of extra detail, you start catching more than everyone. And I think the biggest thing with fishing is to go, keep going. You can watch all the YouTube videos is fantastic because it's all there, but there is something about physically going fishing that's it, isn't it?
So another little sort of analogy of my fishing is it's like stepping stones. If I want to catch a big fish, I'm not going to catch fish every time I go fishing, which I'm fine with. And I think those days when you perhaps don't do so well and you blank and you struggle and it's hard work are just stepping stones to those red letter days. If I keep heading to the right venues and doing the right thing, eventually those red letter days pop up. So I've got my favorite places to blank. It's not all about catching fish for me. You know, I like being outside. I like the nature. I like the journey. And then when you do get an armful of big fish, it's even better.
I mean, I honestly 100% believe that if I go fishing once a week, it makes my mental health and my whole life much better. If I don't go, so I haven't forced myself out to go outside for 3, 4, 5 hours, I feel myself. I get a bit down, anxious, stressed. And I'm not just saying this, 100%, if I do that, we're nothing about catching fish, but I go and have a go, my whole life and my whole week is definitely better.
If you're poorly or something and you're at home for a few days, I'm climbing the walls.
Right? Yeah.
You know, and I think when you generally love fishing, doesn't matter if you just pop down with a pint of maggots and you're catching a few small fish or whether you chase... You get that same satisfaction from being out and just being fishing. So, you know, my fishing started, well, the truth is I can't remember a time when I haven't fished. You know, I was probably that young when my dad used to take me catching minnows and gudgeon and little fish on the river. And as you just do more fishing, you discover you can take it as serious or as simple as you want it. You can get what you want from fishing.
We've got another question. Earlier on when we were speaking about roach, what did you say your biggest roach was?
When people ask my biggest roach, I've got two answers to that because I've had them to just under £4 by design to 315, but I have wound in a £4 on a carp rod. So I have
a £4 on the nose.
Yeah, I had one of exactly £4 one March when I started carp fishing, fishing a tiny little pop up boilie at long range, just trying to get an early carp in March in the spring. And a big enormous roach picked it up. But when I've actually fished for them, 315.
Because the British record roach is £4.5, so that must be the closest you've been to a British record.
Well, I suppose I suppose that bream was pretty close, wasn't it, for the percentage of how big that.
I suppose the percentage wise, yeah.
Yeah, and at the time when I had my big barbel off the Wensum was the exact weight was 17.12, and I know that they're probably caught weekly that size on some of the bigger rivers now, but that was a. I think that's 2009 I caught that. So that was quite a big barbel back then.
So you're not far away from the British record for bream, roach and a barbel.
Well, perch as well.
Five and a perch, well. Yeah.
Yeah, 6'3" is the record perch. So,
Blimey, yeah, so there's a lot happening.
Close but no cigar.
Right, we've got a question in. Let's do this one from Harry. Now, Harry, you've actually just mentioned barbel, so it runs on quite nicely to Harry's one.
Yeah.
What is the best time of year and method to catch a large barbel?
I suppose it's very dependent on what river you're targeting them on.
Yeah.
But for me, it would be in the autumn time.
Yeah.
I find the barbel are slightly heavier in the water. Before it gets too cold as well. And if you were heading to a river, say like the River Trent, it is very belt and braces fishing. You're fishing quite heavy gear because of the strong flow and it's normally boilie and pellet fishing.
Yeah.
If the water is low and clear, you're probably better off going down to casters and maggots and hemp, scaling down that OCD thing and finding down to smaller hooks and smaller bait will definitely get you fishing in the tougher conditions. But my advice, look at the weather, choose to go when the rivers have got a bit of colour in them in the autumn time. Baits like boilies and meat. Personally, I prefer to use a straight lead and then I put a PVA bag of free offerings attached to a hair rig bait because I don't really like those big clumsy feeders swinging about.
Yeah.
The rivers like the Severn, the Wye, the Trent, I'd say meat, boilies and pellets in the autumn.
There we are. I've really enjoyed my barbel fishing recently. I've just really enjoyed learning about it. We've got James Roach, who works in our team, and he's up the Trent. I mean, I must admit, I've got to stop looking at his Instagram because it's getting a bit... His river reports are very different to mine. He's like, oh, yeah, I went out, we had a £12, £11, £15. It's like, where I fish on like the River Arun, which I've been learning about this year, because I thought, right, British records up there is you know, we'd go and catch some nice barbel. And then within 2 months of research, I was asking everyone. After 2 months, I became a little bit depressed without even going fishing. And it seems people can fish there for a lifetime and never catch a barbel. That's how hard it can be. If you really know what you're doing and you fish it for a whole season, you might have one or two. That's the situation.
But wouldn't that be special that moment, because it's been such hard work for you, regardless of the weight, you know, you would get such a buzz. And that's where my fishing comes in. Those things that anything in life that's really hard to achieve is the most rewarded. I love going to the Trent and I normally have a few trips up there in the autumn and get my barbel fishing fix on the Trent. But I must admit, after a few trips up there, because it's quite a long drive for me from where I am in Suffolk, I think, like I said at the beginning of this podcast, I feel full up and I think I'm ready to do something else. I enjoy it, but I think, yeah, that'll do till next year.
Let's do
something else. But if I had those fish in the Wensum still, where I really had to work for each and every bite, it grabs your attention and you want to go more.
Yeah.
So I think like the barbel fishing you've described, it might seem really challenging, but yeah, that's the sort of fishing I like. The tougher the better. I don't know why I do it to myself.
Well, I did fish it. I did catch one. I did catch one. First cast. But no one really fully believes this, anyone that fishes in the area, but I put a 12 mil Robin Red pellet on, 10 hook, put it in. And after I was sort of, you know, when you're still sort of setting up, obviously your net set up as your net set up before you go fishing. I've just put the rod up. The rod's going down. I thought, whoa.
Too good to be true.
I'm really in. I thought, well, that's it's like the first cast, what's going on? And so I thought, there are like, you know, 20, 30 pound carp. I thought, I can't just hook the blooming 20 pound carp. And I get it. And I saw the tail because it wouldn't come up. And I saw the tail and I thought, well, it's a barbel. And it is 10.5 pound first cast. Oh, never seen one since.
No, you peaked too early, Jimmy. That's what that was.
Phil, what is your role at Angling Direct? And sort of how long have you been there?
So I have a very unique job at Angling Direct. There's kind of only one of my job. I'm part of the media team now, and we create all the content for all our YouTube channel, all the social media pages. So whether that be the sort of inspirational fishing videos like my specimen series that we film, product type videos, we do these quick bite type videos. If you any advice you want, whether it be from the real beginner basics type stuff to the more advanced stuff, chances are if you look on Angling Direct's YouTube channel, you'll find the information you want. Keeping on top of all the YouTube platforms, replying to the comments, scheduling all the content that goes on, planning all the filming projects. So as I mentioned earlier, if you like my specimen series, if I want to catch a particular fish, the planning is so important that we're heading to the right places and that I've done my research. So yeah, it's probably 3 days a week I'm probably out on the bank filming, and then I have a couple of days at home planning and catching up on all the admin stuff as well. But yeah, I enjoy my job. I work with a really good team, and there's always something interesting happening.
You say you're working with, you've got, because on your YouTube channel, and you've got to go and subscribe to the Angling Direct YouTube channel, because as there is everything from beginner up to expert match angler, you've covered, aren't you?
Yeah.
Obviously, Widget's got his Match Masterclass series at the moment as well. Now, that obviously, if you're just into fishing, there's more advanced stuff, but they've just brought in the last few weeks some underwater stuff, which I think even if you're not an angler, you can look at it, fish behavior. It's very, very interesting, isn't it?
I think you could know too much, Jimmy, when I watched that. And you know, the venue that Widget's gone to, without a doubt, it's a commercial fishery and it's quite heavily stocked.
Yeah.
And you think, my word, if there's that many fish and they can react like that in that type of venue, when you're fishing a lake that's got 10 carp in it, it must seem a bit daunting. But we catch them, don't we? Regardless of what we watch on underwater cameras, every now and again, you're looking at a fish in the bottom of your net. But you can definitely learn, you know, even what Widget was doing, from mixing up hook baits, putting smaller baits on, changing the diameter of your line, and yeah, it's all a learning curve, isn't it? And like you say, whether you're a match angler, a specimen angler, a carp angler, you can watch that underwater footage and apply what you've learned to whatever fishing you decide to do.
And with your Phil Spinks specimen series, so just looking at the last ones, there's we've got barbel, chub, barbel, eel, and tench, I think, going back to the past ones.
I think we've nearly done, I mean, I've been doing it a few years now, and I must have covered just about every species now. There isn't many that we haven't done.
Yeah.
You know, we've caught some in the really early days. I think I had a brace of 3-pound roach on a very early specimen series. So we've had big crusions, big tench.
Thinking with your specimen series, obviously Widget's got the underwater stuff. Would you ever try and bring that into your specimen series?
I'm out later this week with Amanda, and we're going to have a bit of a trial run and try and get some pike picking up dead baits on underwater camera. So it's a bit more challenging because you've normally not got that amount of fish in front of you, and you're relying on the fish feeding very close to the bank to be able to use the camera. But yeah, there's definitely situations I can think of where it'd be really interesting to set the camera up and have a play and just see what we can learn from specimen fish as well. We did have a little go with the camera the other week. On a bitterly cold day, I fished a dead bait in front of the camera, and it was worried. I never had a bite all morning, and when we watched that camera, on maybe 10 of a dozen occasions, pike would come down to that dead bait, push it, nose it, look at it, swim past it, And if you hadn't had that, you'd think there's no pike in the swim.
Yeah.
But I'm confident. I mean, we're going to go back Friday and have a little go. And I think because it's all to do with conditions. The weather's a bit milder. It's sort of leveled out a bit. That went from warm to bitterly cold. And I think now the weather's a bit even, I think they'll feed. I reckon we'll have a couple pickup baits on camera.
Yeah, I love seeing how pike feed or sometimes don't feed. I mean, I don't know, pike, sometimes I go pike fishing. I think the conditions are bang on. This is going to be, I leave the house at 5. I think this is, and you're there and you kind of come home and there's not even a whiff. And then I've been down river or lakes and some, they just turn on some days, don't they? It's just madness. You think, well, it's eating the float now.
I tend to not, I mean, there's loads of things you can think about, like I said earlier about the moon phases and the air pressures and the weather, but because my sort of personal fishing time is quite limited, I don't look into it too much. You wouldn't leave the house, would you?
Yeah.
I enjoy going. And like you say, some days, I can't explain why. It's like someone's just flicked a switch and the pike are just... And a real odd thing with pike fishing that I found, I can be out, say I'm in my boat pike fishing. I haven't had a bite for 4 hours and I've got 3 rods fanned out all around the boat.
Yeah.
And then suddenly this float will start moving and I pick the rod up and I'm connected to a pike. And then that float almost straight away starts moving. And then that, it's like, you know, and then floats are miles apart. So it's not as if a group of fish have moved in. It's just something has triggered them into feeding. You quite often when you get one bite pike fishing, you're not far away from another bite. So,
Have you ever used circle hooks for pike fishing? It's something I've been experimenting with.
No, not really. I am a bit old hat. You know, I use quite, when I pike fish, I'm not worried about catching numbers of pike anymore.
Yeah.
So I'm normally using quite big dead baits and I'll use treble hooks, although I'll use the semi-barbless ones because it makes it easy to unhook the pike, get your hooks out of your net as well. And if you're really unlucky and one goes in your finger, it's a bit easier to get out your finger as well. I because of the style of my pike fishing where I'm just so most of the time I'm just letting big dead baits soak on the right waters, trying to catch those big fish. Treble hooks suit my style of fishing.
I think, and if you're listening to this and you've just been to a get fishing event in the summer, I'd say if you want to try pike fishing, I think you probably need to be with someone that has done it before. I don't know if you should just rush out on your own the second time you've ever been fishing.
100%. The bit of advice I give everyone, if you're interested in pike fishing, go with someone with some experience because they are a little bit more challenging to handle than other species.
Yeah.
They have got sharp teeth and they're very fragile. So you need all the right unhooking equipment. I mean, we have, again, on our YouTube channel, we've done handling and unhooking videos on pike to help people. But you can't beat the experience. So, don't be scared to ask someone. If you know someone that goes pike fishing, normally if you say, I'd like to go, but I'm not too sure, they'll take you.
And really importantly as well, with this angling, how many angling directs are there? 40-something around the country?
We must be around 50 now. I don't 50. Know the exact number, but I think it is. I'm pretty sure it is 50.
So if in angling direct stores... they're obviously massive. They're like superstores with everything you ever need for all different types of fishing.
Yeah.
But really, really importantly, I think, because I've noticed this since I've started going to them, I went to the grand opening at Cheltenham, where I saw Widget and Chris.
Yeah.
There's a huge amount of help available in store from actual Angling Trust licensed qualified coaches in store. And because I think... if you went to your local supermarket to buy food, for example, they might not be food experts. It's not Angling Direct's not random people that have just got a job in a shop. These people are very good anglers. When I went there, Kev Hewitt's there, world champion carp anglers.
Yeah.
They're behind the till serving people. That's the level.
And don't be scared to ask. Even if you've got a question, you're worried it might seem a silly question. You know, don't be intimidated. Go up and speak to the staff. They're all really friendly. And quite often in a shop, you'll have different staff. One might be more knowledgeable on carp angling. Then another one might be a better match angler. There'll always be someone in store that'll help you.
So, have you worked in the And in actual, the shops before, Phil?
Yeah, so when I first... So my story of Angling Direct is I did actually work for Angling Direct when they first opened. I think it was around 2002, I want to say. That might be wrong, yeah. But it was a while ago. And I used to do all the mail orders for them. And then I left for a few years, and I've now been back about coming up to 8 years now, I think. And I was the assistant manager in a shop near me in Beckles.
So Widget's been there from the start as well, hasn't he?
Widget's been with us about 110 years, yeah. I think.
he doesn't look sort of 78, but he is.
he honestly went straight to Angling. I think he had a weekend job when he was at school with us.
Yeah.
And then when he left school, became full-time, and we've been stuck with him ever since, yeah.
And then you went to school with Oliver, the marketing manager.
Yeah, me and Ollie have known each other long before Angling Direct existed, through fishing and school and stuff, yeah.
But it's a lovely little group at Angling Direct. I really enjoy everyone's company from Angling Direct. I've never met a bad egg. And
yeah,
we were very grateful, you know, Angling Direct came in to help us 2 or 3 years ago become partners or retail partners of the Get Fishing campaign by the Angling Trust. And, you know, we're all here to get more people fishing more often. We're all very passionate. We all have the same aim.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's been lovely working with you guys.
Good. Yeah.
So the big question, who's better angler, you or Widget?
I'll let you answer that one, Jimmy.
Very controversial.
I'm sure he'd show me a clean set of heels in a match.
I fished next to Widget in a match and he smashed me up, didn't he?
Yeah, he destroyed me.
He
loves his match fishing. Yeah. As soon as I started a match, I just want to try and catch one big fish. That's the problem.
Yeah, it's not very good when you need 180 pounds, is it? I saw him at Fishermania, Monk's Lakes, at a qualifier last year.
Yeah.
We were actually pegged a few pegs away, which is quite lucky because he forgot all his keep nets to a Fishermania qualifier.
That's a very widgety thing to do.
This is the Angling Direct match fishing expert. And even 2 weeks after, they put a video from Angling Direct at Angling Direct on Instagram. It's saying, what do you need match fishing? So I put under there, probably take your keep nets, Widget. Luckily, I was going to Todbury for another Fishermania qualifier. So I had like 10, no, I had, I think I had 13 or 14 keep nets in the car, just completely randomly. So I lent him 4 or 5, and he was only 2-3 fish off for qualifying for Fishermania. But
I was then going to ask, how many of those keep nets did he have to use that day?
About 4, I think. Yeah, I think he was up to 4 or 5. Yeah, no, he did all right. I think 170 pound, 180 pound, I think he did.
Yeah.
And my result was, we don't speak about.
I did not weigh in. The wind was blowing the other way, Jimmy, I reckon.
In actual fact, that was talking about location. It was at Monk's Lakes, and it was commercial fishery, but it's one of them places where you had to be on an MPEG. That was, if you weren't on an MPEG, was it.
I think that's where I'd struggle with match fishing. A lot of my fishing is location and finding the fish and all the footwork before I... And if I'm just told I've got to fish there for 5 hours, well, I don't want to go there. The fish are over there.
Yeah, very true, Phil. Yeah. Phil Spinks, you've been an absolute legend. We hope to get you on again soon because, you know, it is remarkable. Go and follow Phil_Spinks on Instagram and just have a look at some of the pictures. It's worth having a look.
And I'll give my specimen series a shameless plug as well, Jimmy.
Yes.
Like the question about barbel fishing, if you want a more in-depth bit of knowledge about any species, I'm sure if you check out the specimen series, I've probably fished for most different species, and there's a lot of information about tackle and rigs and everything you'd want to know. So hopefully the series inspires people to fish for different types of fish and puts them on the right path to catching a few as well.
There we go. Go and find Angling Direct on YouTube as well as Instagram and Facebook at Angling Direct. Come and like the Get Fishing socials as well. We're all here to get more people fishing more often. Phil, thank you so much for your time.
Pleasure. Yes, good.
Tell Amanda, you're going fishing with Amanda this week, are you?
Yeah, Friday I'm out with Amanda, yeah.
Now, I've never spoken with Amanda. She's done a little news blog for us last year because Amanda, who is also part of the Angling Direct media team, Now, yeah. It's a really interesting story because, correct me if I'm wrong, Phil, but she joined as a non-angler, as kind of a photographer, and then became a mad angler.
Yeah, so our head photographer and I used to go out for days with Amanda to get photography for social and the website.
Yeah.
And I think it started one February when I was catching a few carp one day, and the bobbin pulls up and the reel spins round, and I say to Amanda, "Go on, Amanda, you pick the rod up." Now wind back a few years later, she's a bit of a nuisance with a fishing rod now. She catches more than me on some days.
You should go and find her on Instagram because it is her short timing angling, and this is a great example of hanging around with the right people. Some of the pictures of the carp is ridiculous. And what Widget said to me, these are the words. Oh yeah, Amanda's worse than Phil now. She don't want to go home.
I can remember times when we'd go out filming, and I was very much, let me just have one more cast. Let's just stay a bit longer. And now it gets to the stage where I say, should we go home, Amanda? Give it another half an hour, Phil. A little bit longer. She's a mini me, I think. I've created a bit of a monster there, I think.
Send her my love. I'm hoping we can get her on the podcast to talk about her little journey in the summer because I think it's a story that will, it's got to be a positive story for anglers.
Oh, really. I think Amanda as well, because she's spent far too much time hanging around me. She likes all the different species as well. So she doesn't just do one particular type of fishing. She likes carp fishing, perch fishing, pike fishing. She definitely likes the lure fishing as well. So,
fantastic. Brilliant, Phil. Thank you very much for your time, buddy. Cheers, mate. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Get Fishing podcast. Please do subscribe on your favorite podcast provider. Come and subscribe to the Get Fishing YouTube channel and our Instagram at Get Into Fishing. If you are listening to this podcast and you're wondering, how do I try angling? We've got you covered at the Angling Trust Get Fishing campaign. Basically, I'll leave a link in the description. You can find a fishing event near you, put your postcode in, and you can turn up to an event. Most of them are free, if not very, very low cost. All the equipment is provided. An instructor is provided. You can go fishing very, very easily without spending loads of money. Come into our wonderful hobby or sport of fishing. It's amazing. It'll change your life. I can guarantee it. Thank you for listening. Next up, Dr. Mark Wheeler from iCarp. That's going to be a big episode as well. Please do give us a subscribe.